Third down and goal now. Down goes Cousins again. Shaq Barrett. Well, Shaq Barrett, he's going to make himself a lot of money after this season. He's playing under the franchise tag. He had a great year last year, and he's the real deal.
Tom Brady is the familiar face of the Buccaneers, but as Tampa Bay makes its long-awaited playoff push, there's another name you should know. Shaq Barrett. The defensive end has gone from anonymous journeyman to NFL sack leader to star of one of the league's best defenses. Today, Sam Borden reports on the improbable rise of Shaq Barrett and where he might be headed next. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, December 16th. This is ESPN Daily. Hey, Sam, thanks for joining me.
Absolutely, Pablo. Glad to be here.
Sam Borden is a global sports correspondent for ESPN. So we hear a lot, a whole lot, about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because of something or other happening with Tom Brady. But you wrote a profile of their star pass rusher, Shaquille Barrett, known as Shaq.
I mean, yeah, let's be honest, Pablo. Obviously, Brady is incredibly talented. He's the name and lights. He's the pretty face. But I think it's fair to say that Barrett and the Bucs' defense may end up being the determining factor in just how far Tampa goes this year.
And how good is Shaq Barrett? Just give a sketch for those who are not familiar with the man's work.
I mean, he broke the Tampa Bay franchise record for sacks last season in his first year with the Bucs.
Ryan under pressure, down at the 36. And Shaq Barrett adds to his sack total, surpassing Warren Sapp all time as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer.
So this guy, Shaq Barrett, reaching this level of impact in the NFL, this was by no means something that was widely anticipated when he first entered the league.
It's amazing to be like, not at the pinnacle because I still think I'm getting better and I have a lot of work to do, but for the pinnacle of my career so far, it feels good to just kind of be the big man on campus after always being an underdog.
I want to actually start with this event that I didn't even know was a thing. It's an event that Shaq Barrett tells you was a game changer. So take me back, Sam, to the Big Cedar Lodge somewhere in Missouri a couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of a funny thing to think about in terms of the juxtaposition. This, you know, sort of swanky hunting lodge style resort in the Ozarks, and you've got a whole bunch of the NFL's top pass rushers, defensive talents sort of converging on it. It's run by Von Miller. He calls it the Pass Rusher Summit. Bradley Chubb, Bud Dupree are there in 2018. Warren Sapp, Bruce Smith are some of the instructors there. And Shaq Barrett is there too. And along with him is a pass rushing guru named Chuck Smith, who leads a lot of the sessions that these guys go through.
I love the idea of a pass rushing guru because this occupation, of course, has these like specialists. I just never meet them. But you're describing here, Sam, this sort of like mini Davos or Sun Valley for pass rushers. And I want to understand the tone of a retreat like this. Is this something that is super serious, super competitive? Is it like a weekend camping trip? What's it like?
These guys were having a lot of fun. There were a lot of steaks consumed. There was a lot of drinks consumed. It sounded as though there was an afternoon of go-karting, a late night boat ride going bow fishing. But there also was some serious football business. These guys got really in depth, really into the nitty gritty of how you rush the quarterback.
How does Shaq Barrett wind up at the summit? Because at this point, it's June 2018. It's not like he's the obvious name to include alongside, you know, Bruce Smith or Von Miller.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's one of my favorite things. When I was doing the reporting for the article after Shaq told me about this, I was kind of going back through some of the like local articles from the papers around in the Ozarks that might have been written at that time. And I stumbled upon like a really tiny story that was basically saying, hey, like Von Miller is coming to the Ozarks and, you know, he's going to have his pass rushing summit. And they listed some of the players and, you know, personalities. And Shaq Barrett at this point was, you know, a fairly unknown player, and he was sort of listed under other players that are attending.
Also receiving votes, Shaq Barrett. And for those who are uninitiated, Sam, describe the character of Von Miller. Where does he fit into this whole picture?
Yeah, I mean, Von Miller is a defensive legend of the NFL. He's an eight-time Pro Bowler. He's been the face of the Broncos defense for a long time, won a Super Bowl with them. And I think in a lot of ways, he's seen as sort of like an elder among pass rushers, defensive guys in the NFL.
And so how is it, Sam, that Shaq Barrett finds himself in Von Miller's company at this retreat?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that, you know, Von Miller is a veteran and he takes being a mentor seriously. I think if you talk to any of the young defensive players that have come through Denver, they all speak pretty highly of how Von treats them. And Shaq and Von Miller became close very quickly. And so even though he was a backup, Von Miller made sure that Shaq had an invite to this summit.
So at this very fancy football summit with veterans and stars who are there to teach this particular craft, Shaq Barrett winds up with an audience, Sam. And what happens?
For Shaq Barrett, this summit turned into really a life-changing and career-changing weekend. And it began with this session that Chuck Smith, who, like I said, was sort of a pass-rushing guru, gave, where he explains a technique called the cross chop. The cross chop is a pass rushing technique where the pass rusher smacks down hard on the lineman's outside arm like he's cutting wood, then reaches up and pulls himself past so that he can get to the quarterback.
It's like if you got somebody who's shooting their hands, you can cross chop, clear yourself. I like that cross chop move. It's a deadly move. You got the attack who's shooting their hands on you.
As Smith was explaining how this technique is done, the other guys that maybe knew the technique or just weren't as interested, they're starting to sort of chat to each other. But Barrett is the volunteer. He's the one up there that Chuck Smith is demonstrating on, and he is rapt. He is watching Smith move his arms this way and that. He's watching Smith turn his hands and show him exactly what he's supposed to do. And what Barrett tells me is that in that moment, he realized, okay, this is something that's going to take me to the next level.
I want to fully appreciate the technique involved here, Sam, because there is like a martial arts dynamic almost to like these different styles of pass rushing approaches. And just give me a sense of like the variety, like some of the names of the kinds of techniques that people are using.
Yeah, it was all very new to me too. And I said to Shaq, I said, so give me like an example, what were you doing before you learned the cross chop? And he said that when he got to the NFL, he only really had two techniques that he felt comfortable using when he was trying to get to the quarterback.
Coming out of college, I had two rushes. Double swipe, so you run around, the tackle shoot their hands, you try to double swipe them. And the other one is you run and bulk, like put your helmet under the tackle, like chin, and just try to push him straight back.
This cross chop is a little bit of a combination of the two, where you're using your strength to smack down on the lineman's arms, take him off balance that way, and then you're using your finesse to slip past him and get around on the edge. And I think that he hadn't quite realized that there was so much intricacy to rushing the quarterback, but spending time at the summit that weekend opened up a whole new world to him.
So we are at this point in the story, 4 years into Shaq Barrett's career with the Broncos. What was on the line exactly in terms of his trajectory, what he hoped for his career to be, especially as this like fairly anonymous, also receiving votes kind of young player?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I think that in that moment, Shaq felt like, okay, I've solved one of my problems, you know, which is I don't really have enough technique to be the kind of player that I think I can. And now, hey, all of a sudden I'm going to learn these other techniques and I'm going to integrate them into my game. But the other problem was I need to find a team that believes that I can be that kind of star player. He saw himself as a starter, and it seemed as though the Broncos saw him as kind of a career backup.
I knew that it was no way for me to have an opportunity to even compete for a starting job there. No matter what I did, like I was was going to get a short straw regardless.
He ends up playing the 2018 season with the Broncos. And look, I am just looking at Shaq Barrett's stats right now. It doesn't seem like the instruction he received translated immediately to the production that he was hoping for. What got in his way in Denver?
He would say, and he did say, that he felt as though he didn't get a fair shake, that Vance Joseph, who was the coach at the time, and the rest of the Broncos front office were invested in Bradley Chubb, and understandably, he was a big draft pick for them. And the way Shaq tells it, he didn't even get a chance to compete for the starting job.
That was technically my position that I played, and then they moved me to the other side behind Vaughn and let the other two guys compete. Once they was done competing, they moved me back over there as a number two. And I'm like, like it was nothing that the Broncos could have did to bring me back after that year.
So Shaq Barrett says goodbye to Denver. He ends up finding his way to this new situation in Tampa in 2019. And there, I mean, he gets a type of success that makes Denver look insane. Like, he ends up leading the NFL in sacks, 19 and a half. He gets franchise tagged from the Bucks. He gets guaranteed this big money. And besides, like, the wealth and the stardom, I assume there was a deeper importance to this moment for him.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Shaq is a very pleasant guy, and he's pretty even keel in general. And he wasn't looking to rub Denver's face in it when I was talking with him about it at all. I mean, sure, he felt validated. He felt like, hey, I believed in myself, and they should have believed in me, and now I've proven why they should have. But to him, it was about something more. I mean, this is a guy who came through much of his life worried about security, worried about being able to take care of his family. And to him, after what he had experienced, that breakthrough in Tampa symbolized the kind of safety and security that he'd been chasing for years.
All right, Sam, coming up, I want to dive into Shaq Barrett's past that you just alluded to help us understand his future.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Sam, before the franchise tag with the Bucks, before all the frustration in Denver, before the Ozarks summit, Shaq Barrett is just this young kid in Baltimore, and he's looking for a way out. What did he tell you about his experiences growing up?
It's funny. I remember I asked him, hey, can you tell me a little bit about, you know, the house where you grew up? And he literally started like counting on his fingers, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And he like basically ran out of fingers.
I wish I could have been in like one home for my whole childhood, or two homes, or three homes, or four homes. Like, it was always like, we was always moving.
He said that they were always struggling financially. The bills always caught up to them. He said that they would kind of, you know, sleep wherever they could. He actually told a story that he remembered very well, where they spent, he and his family spent some time living in a senior home where his grandmother was living at the time. And like, he would literally run around like the room where the seniors played bridge and cards.
On like the 17th floor, they had like a pool room and like kind of a game room. So we'd go up there, play pool, go up there, play around a little bit. It was a little open area.
He just described a childhood that was both, you know, anxious because of the family situation, and also dealing with the typical worries that come with living in inner city Baltimore.
People jump people, fight people just because they went to the school. So that's like a reason you gotta watch your back. And then wrong place, wrong time, a reason. Like, there's always some mischief going on that you gotta be aware of and worry about.
When he talked to me about the value of finally making it to the NFL, it was pretty clear that security and safety for his family was something that had been on his mind for a long time.
So football ends up being his desired pathway out of all of this. And as a child, it's important to note here too, there were additional hurdles off the field. What else was standing in the way of his football aspirations?
Yeah, I mean, he loved sports. He loved football. But it was not a situation where he was a natural talent. He loved the game, but he had weight problems. He struggled making the weight limit for Pop Warner. Every year, he said, it was a battle for him to lose weight just before registration for football.
Yeah, you will wear a sauna suit, practice in those, go to the track, run laps around the track. Like, we used to be on a little tuna fish and mustard diet. We tried the Hollywood Black Magic for a little while.
Wait, what is that?
A drink that you mix with water, and it's like a 48-hour that's supposed to help you lose 10 pounds.
What? And I said to him, you know, why would you do that? Why was it so important to you? And I think, as you alluded to, he just saw football both as an escape from all the difficulties that he was facing and his family was facing in their regular life, but also as potentially a way out of the situation for him in the future. By the time he got to high school, he was a beast. There's no doubt about it. He started out his high school career in Baltimore, but then moved to Nebraska, where one of his brothers was already living in essentially a foster care situation.
My brother went there a couple years before me. He was doing really good, excelling in football and wrestling. And we was always like the closest ones in age growing up.
So he finished high school there in Nebraska and then went to Division II, Nebraska, Omaha, because his brother was going there.
I ended up turning down, which was crazy now that I think about it, a full ride scholarship to University of North Dakota in order to go to Nebraska, Omaha as a walk-on. Because
why?
I had,
why?
My brother was still there. I wasn't ready to be. He went to that same college, and I wasn't ready to be on my own yet.
And then he gets there, and after a year, the football team folds. The football program is folded at Nebraska Omaha. So now he's got to figure out somewhere else to go. And so does his brother, because the wrestling program folded also. And at that point, he splits up with his brother.
I'm thinking, like, now it's time for me to go out on my own. I knew he was pretty much looking to go to Nebraska Kearney for wrestling, and I didn't want to go there for anything. So I pretty much put on big boy pants and just started looking at places that, like, wanted me.
And he ends up going to Colorado State. And there he's juggling not just being on his own for the first time, being away from his family, but he also has decided to get married. And as he's finishing his career at Colorado State, looking towards the NFL, he's also trying to figure out, okay, I've got a wife, I've got a baby, and now I'm going to figure out, can I do this football thing for the rest of my life?
So Shaq Barrett goes undrafted. He somehow lands on the Broncos. And what happens there? What did his rookie year show him about the realities of making it at the next level?
And you said it perfectly. I mean, it was just sort of somehow landing on the Broncos. There was a real question as to whether he was going to get a chance in the league. I mean, he got a $10,000 signing bonus. You know, he told me that. He was like, I remember it because at the time it seemed like a lot of money. But when you look back on it, obviously that's a drop in the bucket compared to what a lot of the top tier guys are getting. That first year was a big challenge for him. I think when he looks back on it, he is proud that he was able to stick on the practice squad. He's proud that he was able to get called up to the main roster a couple of times. But it was very clear to him right off the bat that if he wanted to be anything more than a special teams player in the NFL, he was going to have to make some changes in how he rushed the quarterback.
So after his breakout season of 2019, when he figures out how to rush the quarterback, as discussed, Shaq Barrett finds the beginnings of that financial stability he had been chasing pretty much his whole life. Did you talk to him about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a recurrent theme for him. I think, you know, he looks at all of this, leaving the Broncos. I mean, he was prepared to take a two-year deal when he left the Broncos with the Cincinnati Bengals for less money than what the Bucs were offering because he wanted the years. He wanted the stability. And then the Bengals ended up pulling their offer and he ended up going to the Bucs.
It wasn't even between Tampa and the Bengals. It was the Bengals, 100%. I told you I was a security type guy, stability type guy. He was going to offer me a two-year deal. I wanted to come here, but like the money, like I wanted the money for my family to be secure.
when I talk to him and I say, hey, you know, how do you feel about what you're doing with the Bucks? How do you feel about the expectations that Tampa now has in terms of a Super Bowl? He's excited to talk about all that. But I think he looks at this moment in time more in terms of, okay, I'm on the cusp of really getting everything I've ever wanted. And that has more to do with security and stability than it does with a Super Bowl ring.
Yeah, so what's on the line for Shaq Barrett right now? Because this mentality you described, it applies especially to this season and what he is hopefully going to get next.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. In some ways, this season is not all that dissimilar than what he's faced in the past, because he did get franchise tagged. He didn't get that long-term deal that he wanted. Yeah, he got a lot of money. There's no doubt about it. And that's great. And he's grateful and happy for it. But he didn't get that, okay, this is where I'm going to be. This is a team that believes in me long-term. This is a team that's going to set me up and my family up for the future that I really, really want. So I think he looks at this season as yet another instance where he has to push and push and push to get that thing that he wants. Now it's closer than it's ever been before. And I think that's a huge motivation for him, but he's not there yet.
So knowing what you know about Shaq Barrett now, Sam, having traced the trajectory to today, what goes through your mind when you watch him play on the Buccaneers?
You know, it's funny. Every time I watch him, in my mind, I have this image of him like bowfish hunting in the Ozarks, you know? I just keep thinking of that weekend and him, you know, with these guys not really feeling like he belongs in that moment. And now, I mean, look, who knows what's going to happen this coming summer in terms of COVID and whether pass rushing summits can even exist. But I think there's no doubt that the next time those guys get together, Shaq Barrett's going to feel a lot more like he belongs in that group than he did in 2018.
Sam Borden, thank you for joining us on ESPN Daily.
Thanks, Pablo.
Okay, up next, how Lamar Jackson gave the idea of a brownout a whole new meaning.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Here's another story I want you to know. On Monday night in the fourth quarter of the Ravens' visit to the Browns, Lamar Jackson left the game to pay a visit of his own, hustling through the stadium's bowels to the locker room. But the internet quickly sniffed out another theory, that Lamar was going for two. Number two, that is. Jackson, of course, denied this, even dropping a reference to Paul Pierce's infamous NBA Finals deuce.
No, I was cramping. I ain't putting on Paul Pierce. I didn't put a Paul Pierce. I was cramping.
But something still kind of smelled off. It still seemed like nature had been calling. So we called our friend Dave Fleming, the author of the iconic ESPN feature, The Tao of Poo, which chronicles this very phenomenon among athletes, to probe further. Dave, you are our expert when it comes to all things athlete relief, I would say. So when you saw what happened with Lamar Jackson on Monday Night Football, what was your first thought?
My first thought was I watched the replay with my daughter, my oldest daughter, who she was the one who watched him do that nervous butt clenching sprint back to the locker room. And she's the one who's like, yeah, cramps don't make you run like that. If you're about to poop your pants, that's what makes you run like that. So it was my daughter who pointed it out to me first.
So the Fleming family clearly has an expertise beyond normal households on this subject matter. Your piece, Dave, The Tao of Poo. I mean, You went into incredible detail about the decision-making process that athletes face when they experience gastrointestinal distress and like the biology of all of that. So just take us inside here. What is actually happening when Lamar Jackson theoretically is dealing with such a matter?
Well, the fascinating thing and the conclusion that we came to with that story was that it's not surprising that athletes lose control of their bowels. It's when you learn the biology, it's actually surprising that more athletes don't lose control of their bowels. And the story really ended up being, all jokes aside, I mean, it's about athletes pushing themselves beyond their limits. And losing control of your bowels is one of the side effects of pushing yourself beyond your physical limits. And what happens is, the minute you do any kind of extreme exercising, your body, as a sort of fight or flight response, begins shunting blood away from non-essential organs. And one of them just happens to be, your bowels and your intestines. And so what happens is, the mix of nerves and nutrition and extreme exercise, things begin to add up and athletes lose control.
So the cramps excuse in specific that Lamar claimed, which gets into why athletes maybe don't want to admit this stuff, is that an excuse you'd heard before?
Oh, all the time. And it's fascinating, at least to me, and perhaps you, is that nothing makes people seem more human than the fact that we all poop. And we tend to think of athletes as superhuman beings. And it's funny how the tendency is to always deny, because I think they understand intrinsically that there's nothing that makes you seem more normal and just sort of ordinary than pooping your pants in the middle of a Monday night football game. And he shouldn't feel too bad about it at all.
Dave, I want to lure Lamar Jackson out of, I guess, the bathroom. I want him to be comfortable with this. Are there other football players who've had a similar issue, who've just had to go?
Well, the best example of that was the Robbie Toback, the former center for the Seattle Seahawks. He was having some gastrointestinal distress before a game, but they needed him to play. So he took a bunch of Imodium and tried to just suck it up and get out there and play. And while I think blocking or protecting on a blitz, I think we described it as he Jackson Pollocked the back of his football pants. And the quarterback at the time was Matt Hasselbeck, who honestly, every time I see him or interact with him, he still reminds me about bringing this up. But it really led to a classic ending to our Tao of Poo story, which was, you know, Toback is still playing. He's already pooped his pants, but Hasselbeck keeps getting under center.
Oh, no.
Yes, until he comes to the sideline and the trainer comes running over to him and screams, "You need to stop licking your fingers."
Dave Fleming, thank you for being flush with wisdom.
It's my pleasure, as always. Thanks for bringing this story back up.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to Pooh tomorrow.